I have to say, just on a on personal note, has nothing to do with my message, but I know some of you are on Facebook, and you may have seen this, and I just want to clear up any confusion about this. My daughter, you know, a lot of times I really love my daughter, and I think very highly of her, but then there's other times when she does things that just irritates me so much and hurts me deeply. There's this app that you can get on, I don't know if you can get it on smartphones, but it was something that she got on her computer or on Facebook somehow, and it takes a picture of a person, and it estimates their age. And so she, first of all, did it to her mother. And Sue came in at 40 years old. So she's rather proud of that. Then she did me. I came in at 66. Now, I'm actually a year and a half younger than Sue. But according to how we look, I'm 26 years her senior. So anyways, I've got to have a talking to my daughter. And she posted this on Facebook, if you can believe that. So anyways... I'm not 66, I'm only 48, so we're in the midst of a series. This is the second to last one. Next week will be the final one in the series, Making Your Family Function. That's what we've been talking about these last number of weeks. And the family is like any organization out there, that if it's going to be successful, that success is going to rise and fall on the leadership that's in that organization, and so it is in the family. Traditionally, men have been viewed as the leaders of families, but quite honestly, part of what we're looking at in this series is what is a dysfunctional family and what can a functional family actually look like. A lot of the reason why families are dysfunctional in our society today is because men have been dysfunctional in their leadership style in the families. Most men will choose their model of being a leader from something in the secular world. They will look either to the military model or to the CEO of a corporation model. Both of them are the kind of leader that dictates and barks out orders to other people, and everybody who is under their command or under their chain of responsibility does what this person says because that's how the organization works. And when it comes to the military, for sure, that has to be the way it is. But that's a very poor model for the family. That is not how it works in the family, and those of you who have been married and who have children maybe started off into your relationship with your wife and the part of parenting thinking that it could be like that, you probably have found out that it doesn't work. And if you're still operating under that method of operation, you're probably in a very frustrated place today, either in your relationship with your wife or in your parenting responsibilities. So we're going to look today at some things that will help parents or help men realize what it is that God says of how we're supposed to be leaders in our families. We need to have men that will be loving leaders, and that's what the Bible is going to show to us today. Now, here's the big question I know that many of you are thinking, and I'm going to look at this from the two sexes in the congregation today. I know that women are thinking this, oh yeah, here we go again. A man is going to stand at the pulpit this morning and is going to tell us why men need to be leaders and that they're better than women. And they're asking the question, why do men have to be the leader of the family? But the men are sitting there and they're saying, uh-oh, here we go again. That preacher is up there telling us what we have to do when all I really want to do is just sit back and have some peace and quiet around the house. Why do the men have to be the leaders in the family? Why can't the wife do it? Well, same question, but different perspectives, right? We're going to look at answering that question today. Let me begin by just briefly addressing that issue. Why are men the leaders in the home? And which translates into being leaders in the church and being leaders in the community, being leaders in the country, and so on. I'll give you a couple of reasons why I believe that men need to be leaders in the home. Now, you need to understand that I'm coming at this strictly from a spiritual, theological perspective. I'm not coming at this from a humanistic perspective, because you can make arguments and cases all you want to about that, and I'm not in the business of trying to argue with anybody about those things. But I am here to make a case from a theological, from a spiritual, from a biblical perspective that men need to be leaders in the home. So you may disagree with me on some of this stuff, and it's your right to do that, but I'm coming at it from a theological, biblical perspective. Reason number one why I think the men need to be leaders in the home is because of the creation order. If we look in Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, we see that man was created first, and then out of the man, God created the woman. Before God created the woman, he gave to man the responsibility of being the caretaker of the earth and ruling over all of God's creation. And then God brought, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in detail in a few moments, he brought along the woman to be that which would support him and help him be his partner in that. So there's an order that is given, but more importantly than that order, I believe, is what we refer to as the headship principle. And if you want to see this with your own eyes, 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is the passage that we're going to look at for this. And I'm only touching on this briefly, but I want you to just see this one verse with me, and you can listen to it. I'll read it a couple of times. This is what Paul says, and he's talking about propriety in worship service, how things should be done in a worship service in an orderly and in a God-honoring way. And so verse 3 of 1 Corinthians 11, he says this, "Now I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God." So here we have the man, that, let me read it again, that the head of every man is Christ, the head of every woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. There are three aspects of relationships that are talked about here. The relationship between man and Christ, the relationship between the woman and the man, and then the relationship between Christ and the Father. They show to us a headship principle. Now, this idea of headship and being the head of the family or being the head of the woman, I think a lot of times men and sometimes women look at it like this idea that he's the CEO, he's the general of the family, and what he says I have to do because he's the head of the family. That's not what it's about at all. And let's reason through this briefly. First of all, as the Father is, there is an order established here that as the Father is the head of Christ, so Christ is the head of man, so man is the head of woman. That's the order that is given here. But what does that really mean? This is not a forced headship by any means or on any level, or it just doesn't work. Think about it like this with me, that Christ willingly submitted himself to the will of the Father. He allowed the Father, he became submissive or subservient to the Father of his own will. Philippians chapter 4 talks to us about that. You can read that on your own if you don't believe me. But then, for the man to put Christ as his head over him, what does the man have to do? He comes willingly and submits himself and places him underneath the headship of Christ. And that's what all of us do when we come to faith in Christ. We, as it were, bend the knee of the heart, say, I submit to Christ. And so the image that is given here of Christ being the head over the man is coming willingly and submitting. Christ does not force anybody to follow him. So if this is the pattern that Christ willingly followed, submitted to the Father, the man willingly submits to Christ, what needs to happen with the woman for the man to be the head of the man? She needs to willingly come and submit to the headship of the man in the household. Not an easy thing to do. Each level reflects the one before it. The headship of man to the woman reflects the headship of Christ over the man. So if a woman isn't being respectful to the headship of her husband in her household, it's going to totally ruin the witness of that family in the community. So is the headship of the man to Christ that reflects the headship of the Father to the Son. Here's the thing. Biblical headship is not about control, but it's about serving the needs of those that they lead. When Christ submitted to the Father, he did that because he knew that the Father could care for his every need, and he had no worries about that, so he willingly submitted to the Father. When you come to faith in Christ, part of the reason why we do that is because we believe that God is so awesome and so great that he can meet all of my needs for time and for eternity, and so it's no problem. I come to him and I submit to him. I place myself under his headship because I know that he will care for me. And the whole thing of when you get married, guys, is that you're making a pledge to this lady that you're marrying. And what you're saying is, I'm willing to be that person that is going to lead our family and be the one that's going to meet all of our needs. That I'm going to figure out the way that we're going to provide for ourselves financially. Doesn't mean you have to earn all the money, but we're going to figure out a way together to do this. That I'm going to be the ones that's going to lead us spiritually, and I'm going to lead us in this community. I'm going to lead us when we're raising kids. I'm not going to just punt on that and leave that all to you as the wife. That's the woman's job. That I'm going to be actively engaged in raising children. And the thing of it is, guys, when you take that approach to it, that you're going to be the caregiver to your spouse, to your wife, she'll have no problem coming in under that kind of headship and that kind of leadership. So do your wives know that you love them? Do they believe that you care for them? And are you setting their needs ahead of your own? Now, I'm talking about the relationship of a husband and wife here because that is the primary relationship in a family. But this could also be said about fathers to children, that children need to have that same kind of security from their father as what a wife does from her husband. Leaders in their home, it's not about power, but it's about serving the members of your family and leading them to become fruitful in the kingdom of God. So we're going to consider five ways that a man can be a leader of the family that he leads and the needs that they have so that they can flourish under his leadership. I am speaking primarily to the men in our church today, but there's a secondary audience that I thought of that this message should apply to, and that's to all of our young ladies that are in the congregation this morning who aren't married yet, who someday are going to make a lovely wife and bride to some lucky guy. And what I would encourage you to do today is if you don't have a pen in your hand, that you get one, and you get a piece of paper, and you take some of these notes down, and you come up with a criteria for a guy that you want to marry. Write it down today. Say, this is the kind of guy that I want to marry, and don't settle for anything less than that. Okay? You do that, and I guarantee you that you're going to save me on some marriage counseling when you get to be an adult, and you're going to have a much happier life. Okay? You do that. Let's look at this. Number one, the husband needs to be a guy, or the man needs to be a guy in the household that's going to lead in decision-making. Men that lead homes are going to be the kind of guy that are going to not be passive, but they're going to engage the family in decisions that need to be made in the home. If you're religious at all, which you are, because you're in church this morning, you likely have heard this term, the head of the household, and there is this idea that the head of the household is the one that makes all the decisions in the household. But that is not what that means, because that would be a very dangerous thing for one person in any organization, let alone in a family, to be able to make all the decisions categorically without the input of other people. That would be a very dangerous thing, because no matter how good, how righteous, how smart, how well-intentioned you might be as a man in your household, you can make mistakes. Just ask your wife. Just ask your kids if they're adults. You can make mistakes. We all can. But here's the thing. We need to view our spouses primarily as that partner that God has given to us, as one who can come alongside of us and help us in decision-making. Tony Evans talked about this in Kingdom Man. If you've been through that, I'm using an illustration that he had. But when God created woman, he did this. He took a rib out of Adam, didn't he? And he took that rib and he fashioned woman out of the dust of the ground. And then he gave that rib back to Adam, but a whole lot more came with it, didn't it? A whole lot more came with it. I mean, she was this beautiful woman, smart, intelligent, could do all kinds of things for Adam, and God gave that back to him. When you give that rib away, men, and you take that rib back, you get a whole lot more with it. You get somebody that's got an opinion, you get somebody that's got intelligence, you get somebody that's got skills, and you are a dumb man if you don't take advantage of that. Because God has put this woman in your life to be a partner in making decisions in your household, and God wants you to see your wife as that equal partner. The role of the man in the household in being a leader is to make sure that the wife is involved in those decisions, not excluded from them, not told what to do, but that she's included in that decision-making process. The problem with most men today, and if you feel like I'm pointing a finger at you in any of this stuff, I assure you there's three of them pointing back at me. The problem with most men today is the same problem that Adam had in the Garden of Eden, and it's that we're passive. Men will put off making decisions until we absolutely have to make the decision. That stuff is literally falling apart. The wheels are falling off the car. The shingles are falling off the roof. The basement is crumbling. Or even worse than that, the finances are falling apart. The relationships are falling apart, and we're forced to have to make decisions. Just like how Adam, when he was confronted with the decision of are they going to eat from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good or evil, what did he do? He punted. He was passive in it, and he punted to Eve. There's actually an argument that could be made, ladies, and you'll like this part of the message. There's an argument that could be made that Eve didn't really commit the original sin, that Adam did, because he was passive in letting his wife eat of that fruit. And that's what we do today, guys. We'll be passive. A functional family will have a man that's going to lead his family in making decisions, and he'll involve his family in those decisions as well. He'll involve his children in those decisions as well, so that it becomes a model for them of how to make good decisions for the rest of their lives. I posted lesson number 6 from Kingdom Man Bible Study, the video, on the church website. If you haven't seen that, or if you have seen it and you want to see it again, it's all about this whole thing of how a man needs to be the leader in his family decision-making with both his wife and with his children. Secondly, though, a man is going to be one that's going to lead his family not only in decision-making but also in communications. The man that is going to lead in communication needs to work at it continuously. Now, I know you're going to chuckle at this, but this is the honest truth. Studies show that the average woman uses 25,000 words a day. Probably not any surprise to us, right? The average man, though, uses 12,500, half the amount of words. So ladies, if you ever get home at the end of the day and you're wondering why your husband doesn't want to talk to you, it's probably because he's somewhere in the threshold of 11,000, 12,000 words that he's used, and he's on a pitch count, as it were, a word count here, and he just doesn't want to squeak out any more words than what he's supposed to, or he's not going to be any good for the next day, kind of thing. And so that's part of the reason why it is. So guys, I say that to us is that we have to work at communication because it doesn't come as naturally to us as what it does to ladies. That's just one of the differences of the sexes, is that women will talk more than what men do. Communication is a big part of leading in your family because communication is how we build marital intimacy with our spouses, with our wives. It is by self-revelation, sharing what's going on in our life, listening to our wife, and then reflecting back to our wife what she shared to us. Though it's such a vital part of communication in the marriage relationship. But when it comes to parenting as well, you have to communicate with your children if you're going to be successful in that. You have to take the time to listen first. And then ask the right questions to your children, and then always have the time to answer those questions. If you bark out orders and expectations of your children without listening and asking first, then you're going to fail miserably as a parent. Deuteronomy 6, we've looked at that in other messages, talks about doing these things in the normal course of life. Talk with your children when you're in the way, when you rise, when you go to bed, and then post these things on the major entryways and the passages in and out of your house. Be a communicator in your house. And Ephesians 5 shares with us that this man who loves his wife as Christ loved the church, this passage that Johnny read, if you're going to love your wife, there has to be a communication element to it. There has to be, if we're going to love our wives the way that Christ loved the church. So decision-making, communication, those are the first two. But the third one, way that a man will lead in his family, is by setting righteous principles for his family. Now, I know that most men will set as the goals of life wealth building, and their work. Hi, I'm Andrew Matthews. I'm the pastor of Zion Baptist Church. It's what I do. It's who I am, right? I try not to make it that. But I'm sure that when you introduce yourself to somebody else, it's, hi, I'm so-and-so, and this is what I do for work. That's where I get my identity. And then we're all concerned about wealth building and making sure that we have enough to live on. But in a functional family, the man who is leading his family in a way that God would want us to has these top three priorities. And I say in this order, and it has to be in this order, if it's going to work, if it's going to be a functional family. God first, your wife second, and the children third. Now, a lot of times this gets flip-flopped. The children become number one. Maybe God's number two and the wife is left way down there in number three. Any other order than God, wife, and children, it's not going to work, guys. Now, what happens after that, I don't think really matters what the other priorities are that come after that, although I'd like to see the church be in there somewheres. But I believe Matthew 6:33 says to us that seek ye first the kingdom of God, and I believe that's the kingdom of God. Seek God himself. Seek your relationship with your wife and seek the relationship with your children. Seek those things first. And then it says all of these other things will be added unto you. You won't have to worry about them because they will take care of themselves. So do you need to worry about your career? Do you need to worry about wealth building? Do you need to worry about those other things? Not so much if you've got those first three in place. Ephesians 5:25 says that we're supposed to, as men, we're supposed to love our wives as Christ loved the church. That's the primary action of a man towards his wife. And this whole thing of setting priorities needs to be done in the context of love, not only for our wife, but also for our children. Here's a good acid test on this, is when you're going through the normal course of life and decisions have to be made and issues have to be dealt with, who do you think of first? You think of yourself and how this impacts me, or do you think of your wife and your children and how it impacts them? If you're not thinking about your wife and your children and how it impacts them, then you have wrong priorities in your life. That's the acid test. So, young ladies, if you get a guy that you're dating and that you're interested in, and he doesn't have you as the number one priority after God, if he doesn't have you above himself as the priority and what he's doing in life, then you don't want to marry the guy. He's just not worth it. He's just not worth it. You want to have a guy that's going to think about you first. You know, I've done a lot. I digress a little bit, but I'll share with you one of my pet peeves. I've done a few weddings over the course of my life where it has obviously become more about the guy than it has been about the girl on the wedding day. And I guess as the father of two daughters and the grandfather of three granddaughters, I think about those things, and I think the wedding day really ought to be all about the bride. The groom is just the guy that's lucky enough to be there. And that's how you have to view it. And if, gals, if some guy wants to come and make the wedding more about him than it is about you, then he's not the guy that you should be marrying. Let's move on. Right priorities. A man needs to lead his family in that. Fourthly, he's going to lead his family into righteous values. And all men, whether we do it intentionally or not, or whether we do it for good or bad, we set the values in the home. All of us as human beings, and I believe it's because of how we are created in the image of God, and God is our Father and our earthly Father, whether we want to admit this and take this responsibility on ourselves or not, guys, we are in some ways the image of God to our children. And so there is a huge imprint that fathers make on their children, for good or bad, whether you do it on purpose or not. So what I'm saying to you guys is make sure that they're good values that you're passing on to your children, and that you're doing it intentionally. And how you'd go about doing that is you sit down and you have a conversation with your wife, and sometimes this is an ongoing conversation, and even a conversation that needs to be revisited through the different phases of life. But you talk with your wife and you establish what the values are for your home. When it comes to things like morality, what is right and what is wrong, justice, the purpose of life, what are the goals of life and the afterlife, and how are you going to impart those truths to your children? You have to do it together as a team. And you could see my message from last week on parents teaching and training their children to get more information on that. Lastly, a man that is going to be a loving leader in his home has to be one who leads from a position of strength and health. And that only makes sense if you think about it. If you are weak, and if you are frail, and if you are sick, you can't expect other people to follow you. You know, you don't want to have the quarterback running out onto the field with a crutch under his arm, do you? Or other guys having to help him out of the huddle to behind the center before he takes the ball. That's just not a good image if your quarterback is in that situation. Nobody's going to cheer for a team like that, and the players are not going to be very excited about playing for a quarterback who's disabled. And so men need to be guys that are living in a healthy way. How can you effectively lead if you are emotionally spent, physically exhausted, or spiritually bankrupt? Maintaining holistic health in your life, and when I say holistic, I mean body, soul, and spirit. Maintaining that in your life, and that's your responsibility as a man to do that. to maintain. You can't blame that on anybody else. But when you maintain that kind of health and care for yourself, you are setting a wonderful example for your spouse, for your wife, but also, more importantly, for your children of how it is that you should live life. And that is, your children are going to learn from how you live your life. They're going to follow your patterns of how it is that you're going to live life, how you live life, and they're going to take that into their adult lives. We live our lives within 7 days. Who you are, what you do, relationships that you have, the values that you live by, and the priorities that you've established in your life are all evident within 7 days. You can't really say that you have a close friendship with somebody else if you haven't had contact with them in 7 days. You can't really say that you do something. So, for example, you're not a reader if you haven't read some portion of a book within 7 days. You're not a golfer if you don't go golfing within 7 days. You're not a fisherman if in the summertime you're not out on the waters within 7 days. You can't really say those things. Who you are is what you are within 7 days. But God has established a rhythm to that in Deuteronomy and in Exodus, and we know it is the Sabbath rest. 6 days shall you work. That's the opportunity for you to provide wealth and sustenance and care for your families. But then on the seventh day, you're supposed to rest. And guys, if you're not doing that, physically finding places to rest, emotionally having those downtimes where you can rest, but more importantly, spiritually, where you stop the efforts of living a righteous life in my own capacities, and I come and I rest completely in what Christ has done for me, and I allow Him to do that wonderful work of grace in my life. If you're not doing that, then you're not going to be in a position of health and strength, and it's going to be impossible for you to lead your family. And I know that you want to lead your family. Men that are loving leaders are going to be decision makers. They're going to lead the family in decision making. They're going to lead the family in communication. They're going to lead the family in the priority of love. They're going to lead the family in establishing righteous values, and they're going to lead the family by setting an example of holistic health. My wife, Sue, shared with her what I was preaching on, as I always do. We talk about it. And she said, Andrew, I think you should share the story of Johnny Lingo. And I said, I'm so glad that you recommended that, because it's a great illustration, and I can't think of a better way to end this message than the story of Johnny Lingo. On a certain isolated Pacific island, when a young man proposed marriage, it was customary to announce it to the entire village. Then he and the whole community would go to the young woman's home. Her father would come outside then, and in front of the whole community, the father and the suitor would barter. So aren't you glad that you don't live in these Pacific islands, but that you live here in Accomack County? It's much better, I think. Obviously, they didn't view themselves as doing anything chauvinistic, even though we might think that it was somewhat that way. The main item of value on this island, though, was the cow. Therefore, the suitor would offer the father a certain number of cows for the daughter. The average bride was worth 2 cows, perhaps 3 if she was unusually bright or attractive. The all-time record was 4 cows. Now, the most eligible bachelor on this particular island was a guy named Johnny Lingo. He was handsome, and he was wealthy, and he was known as a shrewd businessman. Now imagine all the excitement amongst the women on the island when Johnny announced one day that he had selected a wife. But when he shocked everybody by announcing that his choice was a girl named Lisa. Lisa was not even in the top 10 of eligible girls on the island. She was regarded as rather plain and frightfully shy. Some of the jokers of the crowd even suggested that Lisa's father might have to pay Johnny a cow or two in order for this marriage to happen. The community gathered at Lisa's house for the bartering, and then came an even greater shock. Johnny's opening bid for Lisa was 8 cows. Her father almost fainted, but he managed to get the yes out, and the deal was done. That evening, Johnny and Lisa were married, and they departed for the home on an adjacent island. For a full year, no one saw Johnny or Lisa. Then on the first anniversary, they returned to visit her parents. From the moment they arrived at the dock, the grapevine went ballistic with gossip. Everyone said, come and see Johnny and Lisa, you won't believe it. Everybody came, but nobody noticed Johnny. All eyes were on Lisa, She had been transformed. She was a vision of loveliness. She was poised, warm, friendly, confident. At the end of the day, as Johnny and Lisa were preparing to return to their home, one of Johnny's longtime friends pulled him aside and said, "I want to know the secret of this amazing transformation in Lisa. How did it happen?" And Johnny said, "I will tell you. From the time Lisa was born, she had been treated as though she was not worth very much. She had begun to believe that about herself. But I announced to the community that she was an 8-cow wife. And I have treated her that way ever since. She has become that vision of herself that she sees every day in my eyes." Men, what do your family see in your eyes? Does your wife see 8 cows? She should. Do your children see that they're worth 8 cows? They should. You know, we've had 22 men go through the Kingdom Man study over these last number of months. Most of them are from Zion Baptist Church. And if you haven't taken that study, I'd love to go through it with you, or I'd do it all over again. It's a great study. But one of the things that it calls us to do is to make that decision to be a man that's going to be a loving leader in our homes. And guys, I invite you to do that today. Even if it's just in one of the areas that we've talked about today, whether if it's decision-making or communication or setting priorities or values or just taking care of yourself so that you can be that good example and have the energy to lead your family the way that you're supposed to, I invite you to be a kingdom man. I invite you to be a loving leader in your home, because our homes need to have them. Your home needs to have that. Our church needs to have men that will be leading their families with a loving spirit and also leading in our church with a loving spirit. Our communities desperately need to have that. That's what Baltimore needs to have right now. That's what Accomack County needs to have. Our country needs to have that. But sometimes we look too much at the White House and we don't look enough at our own house. And our own house starts with us. Will you be that kingdom man today? Let's take our hymn books and